Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Raj Chellaraj, Assistant Secretary of State for Administration at the U.S. Department of State. Also joining us in our conversation is Bonnie Glick, Project Executive at IBM. Raj, what are some of the significant challenges your bureau faces in administering the diplomatic missions in Iraq and Afghanistan? How does the model for overseas management support within your bureau ease the burden of administrative support in dangerous posts such as these?
Thanks, Al, for that question. Operationally, the model for overseas management support is now known as the Iraq Orientation in Processing Center, OIP. This center developed several concepts and methods to ease the burden of administrative support in danger posts. While developed for danger posts, many of these have potential applicability for other overseas posts. Employees from all federal agencies who are bound for Iraq and who are subject to Chief of Mission or the Ambassador's Authority go through the center to receive their electronic check-in, their OpenNet and email logons, cybersecurity training, deployment support, common access cards, and so forth. This remote check-in process allows employees to take up their responsibilities sooner at posts. It also saves embassy human resource personnel and diplomatic security staff considerable time and effort in the processing and spares them from responding to policy questions from multiple federal agency headquarters and entering security eligibility data into the Department of Defense systems.
Now, Raj, earlier we talked about the very complex mission that your organization has. So I'm curious, what kinds of interagency, private sector, and nonprofit partnerships are you developing to improve operations or outcomes at state? And what are you doing to enable the success of these partnerships and collaboration efforts?
Sure. Happy to address that. Our offices throughout the A Bureau partner with other government agencies, the private sector, and nonprofit organizations regularly to achieve their individual missions. I encourage the A Bureau staff to seek out the best in class in their respective fields, both government and private sector, and benchmark against them. For example, we sponsored the Management Immersion Program, where we place Foreign Services officers in recognized, well-managed external organizations to learn management best practices and bring them back to their posts and the department. Another example is our Overseas School Advisory Council. Having been a product of several degrees myself, I take real pride, and this is very important to me and for us in the Administration Bureau and the department. In 1967, the Department of State established the Overseas School Advisory Council, a public-private partnership with U.S. corporations that have substantial overseas operations. OSAC, as it's known, is the longest-running advisory committee in the department. The purpose of this partnership is to obtain the advice and support of the American corporate community in providing quality education for U.S. citizens' children attending overseas schools. Currently, there are 194 American overseas schools in 132 countries, assisted by the Department of State, and serve 112,000 school-age children of U.S. government and private sector employees stationed abroad, as well as children of host country and third country nationals.
Along the same lines of partnerships, could you tell us about the department's commitment to the small and disadvantaged business community? We understand that your bureau annually recognizes selected small business contractors who have displayed exemplary performance. Could you tell us more about this award and your bureau's efforts in this area?
The Department of State is committed to ensuring the small businesses, including small disadvantaged, 8A, women-owned, HUBZone, and service-disabled, veteran-owned small businesses have the maximum opportunity to participate in the department's acquisition. For example, last year, the department awarded approximately $1.3 billion to small businesses. The department's office of small and disadvantaged business utilization is a strong advocate for small business firms and has a strong history of providing outreach to the small and disadvantaged business community. Our office participates in many small business outreach events locally and throughout the U.S. that offer small and disadvantaged business with opportunities to learn about contracting. For example, we participated in 38 events last year. We also have a successful record of achieving small business goals. Here's something we are very proud of. The Small Business Administration presented the department with the Gold Star Award for excellence in achieving small business goals in both 2005 and 2006. We are also proud of the Mentor Protege program, which encourages large business prime contractors to provide mutually beneficial assistance to small businesses. The department recognizes the achievements and contributions that small businesses make to its mission during the annual Small Business Prime Contractor of the Year award ceremony. The award is sponsored by the Bureau of Administration. It recognizes contractors that have displayed exemplary performance, customer service, management, and technical capabilities. The 2006 award was presented to a team of four highly skilled interpreters, translators, who traveled with our ambassadors in Iraq and provided interpreting support. We also host a small business trade fair at the department each June for firms that sell office supplies and common usage items, as well as three information technology fairs a year, a prime subcontracting networking session in October, and a veterans business affair. So we do quite a bit in this area, and that is why we are successful, and we're really happy that Small Business Administration has recognized us for this.
That's quite impressive.
Turning again to the topic of language services, the State Department has an Office of Language Services that effectively delivers timely, world-class interpreting and translating services to the department, as well as language training. A significant challenge, though, facing this program is recruiting a pool of direct hire employees and contractors who are among the world's best interpreters and translators. How has your organization handled this challenge? And are there any plans to relax some of the Office of Personnel Management's applicant rating procedures and security clearance requirements, which may hinder the recruitment of direct hire employees in this area?
Surely. This is a very critical area for us, and we compete head-on with many organizations, particularly international organizations. Our language staff, our services has a staff of approximately 45 interpreters and translators working in eight languages and a roster of 1,500 contractor interpreters and translators in 40 languages. Finding talented individuals to perform these tasks, evaluating their abilities, and ensuring that they can pass the necessary security scrutiny will always be a challenge. State Department has certain advantages, we believe. The work we ask our interpreters and translators to perform is difficult, but it's also interesting, and it's international. Anyone who can say they work for the State Department, whether as a staff employee or as a contractor, enjoys considerable respect in the profession we've come to know because we are well known for the rigor of our testing process. In our recruiting efforts, for qualified contract interpreters and translators, we require individuals with the highest skill levels and in many languages. And this means that the pool of qualified applicants is limited, in some instances because there's no recurring commercial need for interpreters and translators in certain languages of limited diffusion. We actually have to find individuals with strong language skills and provide them with training in interpreting or translating. Let me give you some examples. We've achieved considerable success in the programs we've organized in such languages as Haitian Creole, Urdu, Hindi, Albanian, Vietnamese, Macedonian, Turkish, and Greek. The search for interpreting and translating talent, particularly for the languages of limited diffusion, will be an unending quest, and it'll continue. Our staff attends conferences, seminars, regional gatherings, academic symposiums, and job fairs to find the talent we need to perform the work that is required by our clients at the White House, the National Security Council, Department of State, among others. We also work closely with our colleagues in the Bureau of Diplomatic Security, turning to your question about the security challenges, to perform the required background checks in a timely manner. We receive excellent support from our diplomatic security office, but there are no shortcuts, as you know, when you're trying to do background checks on people who have lived all over the world. This will always continue to be, I believe, a work in progress.
As the Chief Acquisition Officer, would you give us a sense of how procurement works within the Department of State? Given the State Department's global footprint, how decentralized are procurement operations within the department? And what are the benefits of this decentralization? What are some of the challenges? Also, to what extent does your acquisition model emphasize the customer is king approach within your area?
Sure. Procurement is a key area for us. In our department, it is unique because we have over 200 individual procurement offices at each embassy and post. These offices are located in virtually every country on the planet with every imaginable set of market conditions. Some of this procurement must be done at post because necessary goods or services can only be obtained there. Some examples would be renting a facility for a conference or obtaining janitorial service and vehicle maintenance. These overseas procurement responsibilities are handled by foreign service officers who generally manage procurement as well as a larger portfolio, which could include warehousing, shipping, housing, and motor pool operations. Locally hired procurement staff would support our foreign service officers. For both the foreign service officers and local staff, one of our priorities is to provide worldwide training and oversight of this procurement workforce. Our Office of Procurement Executive, which is in our bureau, uses the department's improved intranet capability and email to assist with these trainings. We have all the online training, we have the website, we have the help desk. So all we have made as part of standard operating procedure. And the department also uses regional procurement support offices. These are the ones I mentioned earlier in Frankfurt, Fort Lauderdale. And it doesn't have to be procured from posts. If it doesn't have to be, we don't do it. We do it regionally as best as we can. We are also focusing more on our technical representatives. In government, it is called COR, Contracting Officer Representative, and we hold seminars to build a community of practice. These CORs need to learn from each other. This is in addition to the normal training required to be designated a COR at the department. We are also focusing on strategic sourcing. We've selected medical supplies, furniture, and digital copiers and strategic sourcing targets. Commodities that the department uses throughout our worldwide operations. For example, we are piloting buying medical services by teaming up with larger partners such as DOD and the Veterans Administration. We are negotiating furniture contracts that will standardize the types of furniture at posts for easier asset management and will leverage our worldwide purchasing power. With digital copiers, we are more concerned about supplier management and increasing the availability of suppliers. So there are a number of things underway. Procurement is a real critical function, and we want to ensure as we standardize and we change some of these processes, we maintain procurement integrity and the proper internal controls and the checks and balances are there.
That's great. One of the other areas that you focus on is in the area of allowances. And the Office of Allowances coordinates policies, regulations, standards, and procedures for overseas allowances and differential payments throughout the federal government. Would you tell us about the e-allowances initiative? And what is the status of this initiative and its implementation?
This is an area where, again, we're trying to focus on the customer and improve the service. The Office of Allowances, which is very closely monitored for obvious reasons, as you can imagine, protects the interests of U.S. government and its employees and families serving overseas by ensuring that overseas allowances and differentials are appropriate to reimburse them for extraordinary costs and difficult living conditions associated with serving abroad. Conditions at our overseas locations may change abruptly. Our current system for submitting and reviewing allowances is a paper-based system, which obviously will have a lag, as you can imagine. And we really think this delay is unacceptable and began developing e-allowances, an online way of doing things with quicker turnaround. So the surveys are done, it's reviewed properly, and the adjustments are made in a very effective manner.
What does the future hold for the U.S. Department of State? We will ask Raj Chelaraj, Assistant Secretary of State for Administration at the U.S. Department of State, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.